Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Yang yang kamanang chajeti tang tang sampajati sukhang sabbe che sukhang ichayasi. Sabbang kamanang paricha jeti. It's one of my favorite sayings of this range retreat, which you should all know by now, is if you want to experience happiness, you have to abandon the five senses. If you want to experience total happiness, then totally abandon the five senses. It shows that the five senses is just a bunch of dukkha, a bunch of suffering. And I think many of you have been playing around in the world of the five senses long enough to know better. Whether it's sight, sound, smells, tastes or touches, you can't get any real satisfaction there. And in fact, it promises so much but gives so little. And one of the reasons why people become monks, why they come to temples, monasteries, is because they want to find some answer to the suffering of life. And they need to find some sign, some light at the end of the tunnel, some real happiness, peace, fulfillment, freedom, whatever it is. And you can go around many, many places looking for such happiness and freedom, but all you find is suffering. And sometimes people come to a monastery and do some meditation and all they find is more suffering. And sometimes they wonder what the hell is going on. And it is because they're not practicing properly. There is an end of that suffering. There's a way outside of the realm of the five senses. But first of all, to understand that way outside, we have to understand what suffering truly is. So today's talk is about suffering, about dukkha. Especially the three types of dukkha which the Buddha talked about, dukkha-dukkha, the suffering-suffering. And viparinama-dukkha, about the suffering which is inherent in changing things. And lastly, my favorite, the sankhara-dukkha. I'm going to explain that. Let's start with that first of all, my favorite one. Never know, you may not get to the other two. Because sankhara dukkha is just so interesting and fascinating. Because one of the translations and meaning of sankhara is like formation, forming, making. One of the greatest of the sankharas is always called chetana. So let's call that chetana dukkha. The suffering which is inherent in willing, in doing something. I think each one of you should have known by now. Every time that you try and do something, get somewhere, make something happen, control something, build it, in the end it's never satisfying. In your early life, you had all these hopes of doing something with your world, getting the perfect relationship, the perfect house, the perfect career, and having some sort of fulfillment in the world. You find it's always less than it promises. Then you may have decided to do something very noble with your life, like build a monastery. And you build a monastery and it's never perfect enough. The buildings are always cracked. The roof never fits on properly. There's always too cold or too hot. There's always something wrong. This is the nature of life. It's never perfect. You look at the trees outside. You try your hardest to develop a beautiful forest. There's always trees which get infected with dieback and start dying. You see brown leaves and dead trunks everywhere. Whatever you do, whatever you make, you put so much effort into it, and in the end, it's never good enough. And that's with the world outside, and how much more so is the world inside. Well, let's go on the interface, your body. You really look after your body. You try and feed it, not too much, not too little, look after your health, and you still get fat. You try and exercise, and you still get sick. You try and rest, and you're still tired. You exercise, and you can't sleep. It's just such a difficult thing with this body of ours. it's not perfect. And then your last resort for many people is the realm of meditation. I'm going to get that perfect. And many people have been spending the last 6 weeks, the first half of this retreat, trying desperately to get their mind perfect. And for most of the time you've been failing miserably. Every now and again you may just find a degree of perfection. A little bit of peace and stillness and joy. Ah, at last I can do it. As soon as you think like that, you're just missing the point. It's called sankhara dukkha. Whatever you create, whatever you make, is always going to be conducive to suffering. And you can start to see this as soon as the mind starts thinking. It's a tension on the mind. Sometimes you don't notice that because you're used to it. You've always been making, doing, controlling, building. In fact, we're so used to such an attitude of mind, we don't realize just how much suffering that is. And that's the biggest problem there. Because, as I said, what the worldling says is happiness. To think, to do, to strive, to make, to go here, to do that. What the worldling says, happiness. The Aryas, no, it's just a whole bunch of suffering. And they say, what the hell are you doing all that for? What's the point of doing all of this? You just make more suffering. Well, Ajahn Chah, he always used to say, the only things he was really interested in was things which have an end to them. Because all the doing never has an end. There's never an end to building monasteries. There's never an end to writing letters. There's never an end to looking after your body. There's never an end to any research you do. There's never an end to teaching. There's no end to being an abbot. All that stuff in the outside has got no end to it. So, that's not a way, place, to invest one's energy and time. Put it somewhere where there is an end, where things stop, where you can see the stopping, the end, where movement finishes, where the clouds clear, where the gloom disperses, where there's an end of something. And places where there's an end of something, there's always peace. It's an end of striving, an end of doing, an end of the problem. And it's great for looking for endings. These are places where you see a little bit of cessation, where something has faded away as we ragged and now has stopped. The settling and stopping of things is what samatha is all about, to calm and quiet things. But when we look about what we're calming and quietening, we're calming and quietening the wrong thing too often, which is why we never feel any peace. Or satisfaction. We never get to the point of what we're supposed to be doing here. Instead of calming what's outside of you, instead of calming the object of your mind, whether it's a breath, whether it's a nimitta or whatever, instead of putting the calm there, put the calm in the opposite direction. Calm the one who wants to calm everything. Calm the controller. Calm the one in charge. Calm sankharas. The will. The builder. That's why a description of nibbana is sabba sankhara samatha. The calming of all sankharas. And the Buddha said it's just people with lots of dust in their eyes who are just delighting in this world, they will find such an idea just impossible to understand. The calming of all sankharas. The calming of doing. They find it impossible to understand because it goes completely against the grain of their very existence. And it's frightening. It is just like telling somebody who's driving in the busy traffic along the freeway to take your hand off the steering wheel. Take your feet off the pedals. Let go. Because we all think if we let go that something's going to go wrong. Our meditation's going to fall apart. Everything's just going to go crazy. And so, at the very most, we just take our hand off the wheel for a second. a millisecond and put it back on again. Just out of fear, out of attachment to our usual way of doing things. But to find out the end of sankhara dukkha, we have to learn somehow to calm that inside, to turn the attention the opposite direction. Who is meditating? What is doing all of this stuff? And calm that down. The sankhara, the chetana, and do that. That's why we have to use mindfulness as a mirror, as a reflector, to see what we're doing, see what the mover is, the controller. If we can do that, we start to understand what this sankhara dukkha is all about. Every time the mind moves, it creates dukkha. That's the nature of sankharas. Every time it thinks, it creates this burden, this suffering, this tension. Every time it wants something, every time you want something, you have what we call in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, piyehi vipayogo, separation from what we want. And that's always there when there's a wanting happening. And that's not just wanting just gross things, it's even wanting refined things. It's wanting jhana, it's wanting insight, it's wanting enlightenment. If you have that as your goal, that as your desire, as soon as you want that, this separation from the desired, even though it's a worthy desire, but it's still a stupid desire. The object is worthy, but the means is counterproductive. So somehow we have to understand why we're suffering and what this dukkha is all about. And so it takes a lot of time, a lot of teaching, a lot of reading, a lot of experimenting, a lot of trying this way, that way, and the other way, until eventually you just get so fed up with just this doer that you give up. You don't give up into just doing more stuff. It's not if I'm not going to do the meditation, so I'm going to do something else. I'm not going to follow the Eightfold Path, I'm going to follow some other path. It's not just exchanging one form of suffering for another form of suffering. It's just getting to the root of it all. That's why that we should always follow this path of yonisamanasikara. And I keep on saying there's a work of the mind which goes back to the source of things, the origin of it. Yoni is the womb, the origin. Or like that simile of the movie theatre, we can follow the light from the movie theatre if it's smoky, to find out where this imagery is coming from. You get to the source of the illness, which is what a doctor's supposed to be doing. Not just looking at the symptoms, but going to the origin of it, the source, or why. And the origin of all the suffering, you'll find this door. Now, keeping on this point, because you should be able to understand from your experience that every time you wanted something, it's never given you what you really needed. In fact, as soon as you want one thing, then you want something else afterwards. Sometimes I'm fascinated to see in the newspapers, people who are in suffering say, all I wanted was a house. All I wanted was some peace. All I wanted was... And that's just complete delusion, because as soon as they get the house, they want something else. As soon as they get the one they love, they're married, they want something else. As soon as they get the million, they want something else. All these people say, the only thing I want is this. It's just complete delusion. Because the wanting is a fever, which doesn't abate just when you sort of give it what it wants. It just makes more wanting. And the same in your meditation as well. I was telling one person recently that the Tibetan teacher, he was a scallywag in many areas, but at least he said some very smart things. And one of the smartest things he pointed out, what we call the path of spiritual materialism. That was old Trungpa, the drunkard monk. But at least he had some insight in some areas. and spiritual materialism is such an important thing to notice in oneself. The wanting to attain, to get somewhere. The same attitude which people have in the world to get on. They want to become the company director, they want to become famous, they want to become appreciated. They want to do something and achieve something. All of that can very easily just be applied to the spiritual life. And you want to be the first in the monastery to get jhanas. At least you want to get jhanas and have a badge. So at the end of the range retreat, I can put the badge on you. Like a little star if you get first jhana. 2 stars if you get second jhana. You can be a 4-star monk. You've got the 4 jhanas and I'll pin them on you in a big ceremony at the end of the range retreat. And you can invite your family and friends. We take photographs and put them in the newsletter. And then you can put sort of the other, you know, the little crowns. I'm Sotapanna. 2 crowns or whatever. And that spiritual materialism, it may be laughable, but why are you trying so hard? You find it is because of that spiritual materialism. It's that which creates the sankhara dukkha. There has to be a source there. Whenever there's a doing, there's a self behind it. A self who wants to exist and measure itself by its achievements. Who sometimes feels just useless, which is the perverse part of achievements. That there's nothing to achieve in that sense, except for the annihilation of that delusion. The achievement which you should be looking for is just the quelling of the sankharas, the calming of everything, the freedom from this doing, this craving, this chanda, which is always pushes the mind out there into the world and disturbs everything. It's not the sound which disturbs you. You disturb the sound, the Buddha said. It's the self which disturbs the whole of samsara and creates it and makes it into sankhara dukkha. So every time you have suffering there, I'm talking about the essential suffering. You've got the dukkha-dukkha, which everybody knows about, but it's still worthwhile pointing out. I'll come back to sankhara-dukkha again later. But dukkha-dukkha, just the suffering of just being hungry, being cold, being sick, having a sore leg, not getting what you want in this physical world, getting old. All that sort of stuff, the dukkha-dukkha. Don't underestimate that. Because that's going to get more and more pronounced the older you get. Life is disappointing. That's its very nature. Your body, which was so beautiful and strong when you were young. Some of you are not that old yet, but it's still you're ugly and you're weak. That's getting worse and worse. Some of you can't even get up in the morning. It's just like an old man. That's what old people do, they just lie there. Look at your old body, this is getting worse and worse. It's suffering and it's going to get worse than that. Your pains aren't going to sort of abate, they're going to get worse as you get older and older. So you look at these sick people, that's what the motivation of the Buddha to practice. You saw the old man, the sick man and the dead man. It's nice to be able to do that. It's not just old people, sick people and dead people which I see. It's the arguing people, the depressed people, the frustrated people, the desperate people, the suicidal people. They're the ones which I find even more interesting. Can we do a super meditation? Don't just look at the ugliness of the body. Look at the super of relationships. Just a difficulty there. Just the amount of pain which is involved there. And you never want a relationship again. Look at the asupa, the pain of having possessions. It's what it means is to have something. You have to look after it and care for it. And it's always something goes wrong with it. You get a clock and its batteries run out. You get something else and it doesn't work. You get a sort of a four-wheel drive Suzuki and a four-wheel doesn't work and it bogs somewhere. All the gizmos you can ever have, they're always just going wrong. Have you ever had anything which never went wrong? Just looking at sometimes, I don't think I've ever had any possession which never went wrong. There's always something which goes wrong. Because that's its nature. And it's just so frustrating when things go wrong. That's suffering. It's the pain, the dukkha, the suffering of life. But we always think that somehow we can outsmart dukkha. That we can just get the beautiful food, the health food, the magic, I don't know what the magic formula is now for things which make you, whether it's an article about American ginseng the other day, which I think was in The Guardian, the miracle food which cures everything. Of course, it doesn't cure everything, otherwise the Chinese have been having ginseng for centuries and they all die. Maybe live a bit longer than somebody else, but that just prolongs, puts off the suffering. There's just no way of avoiding sort of the suffering of the body. So the Buddha said, look upon that. You've only got a short time before the suffering gets so bad it's very hard to sit cross-legged and meditate. It's only got a short time because you've got no energy because of the body is using all its energy to fight the diseases. It's only a short time and you get so old. You can't do any walking meditation anymore. Maybe you get these little carts. You just go to one end of the path and then turn around and go to the other end with a little flag on the cart. But that's all you can do. That's not really walking meditation, is it? But that's your destiny and it's coming fast. And it's 6 weeks, this retreat is already gone. It's fast. When you look at that, it gives you a motive, impetus. Let's do this properly while I've still got the energy. And there's that motivation is important, but you have to have the wisdom, otherwise the motivation just leads to frustration. If that motivation just lets you do more sankharas, right, I'm going to really crack it this range retreat, I'm going to really get into deep meditation this time. Okay, 6 weeks down, now I've got into it, the next 6 weeks I'm going to really do it. This is my retreat, only a few days left, yeah, let's go for it. Stupid people like me have done that. You just waste your time. The path to Nibbana, the path to jhanas, is not a path which is trodden with willpower. People who have had more willpower than me have tried that. They just get tight, frustrated. Instead of willpower, we are calming the wrong thing. We're making more sankhara dukkha. Have to calm the sankharas down, let them go. Once you get this point, the whole of monastic life, meditation, nirvana becomes so obvious, so easy. You realize this was the house builder inside, this was a cause of the suffering. This is self which is always doing things, always messing things about. That saying which I mentioned earlier, in the rains retreat, the path is, but no traveller on it is seen. When is a traveller, a walker, someone doing this journey, then there is no path. You have to let go of that doer, that traveller, until there's no traveller apparent in your meditation. There's no one inside giving the orders. There's no internal commentary, no director of the movie. That's what you should be calming down. Otherwise, if you've got that director going on there, always saying to do this and saying to do that, you never get peaceful. You can get concentrated, in other words, you can stay on one thing for a short period of time. I was saying to someone earlier, you can get concentrated on sex. You can be in bed for hours and not think of anything else. But that's not the point. It's getting this stillness, this freedom, where all the senses disappear. It's getting to these experiences where things stop. And when they stop, they vanish. That's the result of stopping. From cessation, there's nibbana. the thing just disappears. It goes out. It doesn't go anywhere. It's just not there anymore. Its causes have been seen, undermined, and now the effect has stopped. And this peace, emptiness, freedom. So our job is actually to identify that traveller, that sankhara, and just stop it. Let it go. Calm it down until there's no more doing, there's no more managing, there's no more sankhara-ing. And when you start to do this, at last is a feeling of peace and freedom. The happiest times which you ever have are when you're not doing anything, when you're just resting, enjoying the moment, not wanting to go anywhere else, not trying to be anywhere or anything. Why are those happy times? I even remember from my youth, one of the happiest times of my youth, even before I knew anything about Buddhism, was when I had a half-day holiday from school, when I completed my homework, about 13 years old, completed it just in the first half of the lunch hour, and then after lunch, I had nothing to do. No homework, no plans. I just remember walking out the school, just with no place to go, nothing to do. There was an incredible sense of freedom. Even it wasn't great freedom, but still, just so amazing. God, I haven't got this burden of having to do something, of having to get somewhere, having to finish something off. I could just really enjoy the moment. The whole afternoon was mine. And even that was a sense of happiness. Of course, you remember those experiences of contentment, of freedom, but you don't really understand it. It's only later on when you start meditating, when you start doing the letting go, you're doing the freeing of the mind, that you start to recall such experiences and understand why they are happiness, why they are a freedom from suffering. And there was a member of Ajahn Chah similarly, just like the man who was born with a rope around the neck, pulled by the two demons, pulled tight, so he could hardly breathe. And those two demons, I give them different names in different situations, but here I'm going to call them like and dislike. All those two demons, like and dislike, are just pulling at you. And because they've never let up, even once since you were born, you're used to that. You think it's normal. And so, no big problem. It's just life. This is what life is. You just can't breathe. And then one day, either because you hear a talk by a monk, you just get an insight, you're just sitting there and you just let go. No likes, dislikes, or dislikes, this is good enough. Then those two demons let go. Remember what is letting go. It's not your letting go. You letting go is more doing. If you do the letting go, that's not letting go. The two demons, likes and dislikes, they vanish. No like, no dislike, this is good enough. If it happens properly, I can breathe. You never realized such a state was possible. Real peace. Happiness. A happiness of a species you didn't experience before. It may only last a second before those two demons grab the rope and start screwing you again. But, just for those few moments, it gives you the experience of freedom, a taste of something which is more. That's what meditation is about, that taste of freedom. It's not attaining things, it's abandoning those attainments, abandoning the self, abandoning the preferences, freeing the mind of those demons, seeing things disappear, seeing sankhara dukkha, the doing suffering, stop for a short while. Just like when you stop a disease, you feel, at last I'm getting better. And as that disease stops for longer and longer, you get better and better and better. The body starts to get healthy. It starts to feel energized. It starts to feel free. And it can do what it wants. It's just like what happens when you stop the sankharas. When you stop the will. First of all, you just feel a bit of freedom. And that freedom grows and grows and grows. And the joy and the energy grows and grows and grows. It just gets to the tipping point. We just realize, wow, this is the way. This is what the Buddha was talking about. This is the path of the Aryas. This is that path in the jungle which has been overgrown by so much doing. And now it's been refound, which leads to this city of cessation, of nirvana. You discover that overgrown path. It's not some overgrown path in some jungle in India. It's in your mind. That path which has been overgrown by so much activity over your lifetimes. And now you're clearing that path with all these sankharas, all this doing and making and controlling. When you do that, the path is free. The path with no traveller, no doer. And of course, that's when the path just becomes more and more peaceful, more and more still. It is a path which goes inwards, never onwards. The inward path, which means that whatever you experience now is good enough. You don't need to change, you don't need to go anywhere, you don't need to do anything with it. It's the doing which is the problem. That's what one needs to calm down, suppress, stop the doing business. So you're tired, you're restless, you've got a fantasy, you're thinking, whatever, that's not the problem. It's what you're doing about it. That's the problem. If you understand what I mean here, you understand how everything stops. It's what you're doing about it, your relation to it. You're making more bad karma with the bad karma you're experiencing. Controlling it, making more of a self. After a while, one learns how to deal with things by leaving the doer out of the picture. Just watch. Upeka, just looking on. That's what upeka literally means. We translate it as equanimity, because any Pali scholar knows. And upeka means to look. You just look on without interfering. We watch without doing. When that happens, that's the best karma one could possibly do. It's even better than loving kindness. Just watching. And when we just watch without interfering, we find the whole process slows down. And we go in to where we are. In years past, I gave the beautiful simile of the lotus. The lotus which is closed at night. In the early morning it's still closed. The only way a lotus opens up is not because you start peeling it, pulling at the petals to try and find what's inside. That destroys the flower. In the same way that the more you try and unfold your mind through will, the more it destroys the peace, the stability. You just get frustrated, you get sankhara dukkha, and you get fed up, I can't meditate. It's true. I admit that myself. I, Ajahn Brahm, cannot meditate. As soon as Ajahn Brahm gets involved, it all messes up. When Ajahn Brahm disappears, then meditation happens. That's how I. Well, not I. That's how the experience of meditation happens with these five khandhas. When me disappears, then the whole process just unfolds. This is like the real way of a lotus opening. The sun of mindfulness just comes out and just warms the petals of the lotus. They open up one by one.
in their own time, by nature. All you need to do is nothing. Just watch, upeka, like a sun, just doing its thing, just watching, warming, opening. And this is the path which happens, is what meditation is. The lotus just opens up by itself. And you don't do a thing. In fact, if you do something, if you try and hasten the process up, if you try and take a photograph of the lotus so you can tell your friends about it afterwards, if you get excited or afraid, the lotus closes up. All your job is, whatever you're watching right now, just to be with it, making sure the sankhara, the doer, does not get involved, doesn't shake the whole thing up and stop it going. Because the sankharas always move you on to the next lotus. This one isn't good enough. The next one is the right one. Always pushing you to somewhere else. Maybe lotuses aren't my thing. Maybe I like roses. Not roses, maybe weeds are my thing. I don't know what type of flowers you like. It doesn't really matter. Whatever you're experiencing right now is good enough for Nibbana. This moment, as I've said to people, it's like it's got Nibbana right in the center of it, this moment. It's just with covered with layers and layers and layers and layers and layers of coverings. And all one needs to do is just to watch this and watch the thing unwrap by itself. It's a great thing to see the unwrapping of a moment. Just all the superficial things, things like names, thoughts, just disappear. Past and future, where it came from, what it's going to go to, just all disappear. All history and consequences just vanishing. And just all superficial perceptions, especially bodily things, senses, just unwrapping. 5 senses are just wrapping up, so the mind, and the mind just peeling away through the jhanas, always going inwards and inwards and inwards. You can never go inwards when there's a sankhara which is making something for the future. And you ever notice that doing is always about the future? It's never about what's happening now. You're doing something to get somewhere, some destination. And there's no end to destinations. You get to one place and there's another destination just further on. You get to one summit, there's another summit next to it. And you go on, on. That's called samsara, perpetual wandering. We put an end to samsara by stopping wandering. We don't even wander in our meditation. We don't even go on to the next object. We don't even go on to the next experience. We don't even go on into the next moment. We stay with this. We stop. Just watch as the mind just goes into itself. Traveling on this inner journey, like going into the heart of the lotus, like boring into the center of an atom, and in the center of the atom, into the nucleus, into the center of the nucleons, always going inwards to see the great emptiness at the center. Nothing. Nothing there. This is how we develop our mind. It's what meditation is all about. Sankhara dukkha, you should know that. Every time you will something, want something, do something, what does it do to you? It's not as if you're doing it. You're being done. And as you watch this happening, after a while you see, you understand the inner, the essential nature of suffering, and how this house builder has not only just built the stress of life, the separation from what you want, the lack of peace. You understand, as that simile I gave before, this doer, this sankhara, this chetana, is like this sadistic prison guard. who never lets you sit still for a moment, is always ordering you around, like a boss who doesn't even let you take a lunch break, always giving you work. They see you idle for a second, for a millisecond, they make you go somewhere else. And so you're always going somewhere, doing something. You never rest for a moment in your life. Even when you're asleep, the prison guard makes you dream, makes you toss and turn. Never gives you any freedom. Always ordering you. Never actually praising you, usually just always putting you down, not good enough, not sharp enough, not energetic enough. That's what like a prison guard is like. You can imagine one. And that prison guard, the sadist, the controller, the orderer, can't you recognize what that is? Can you understand that that's a source of suffering, that sankhara dukkha? Can you understand and see that and just stop it? Just for a second, just to test it out. You test it out, that's peace. It's freedom. You're out of jail for a moment. Then the prison guard comes out. You're being lazy. Come on, do something else. It's so insidious, this prison guard, this torturer of sankharas. But at least you understand it's dukkha. And the path should be to calm, suppress, pacify, until that prison guard just falls asleep and then vanishes. Then you can just walk out of jail and be free. Be free without anything pushing and pulling you. With no preferences, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. With just stillness in the mind. And that's why this path of meditation, you experience it for yourself. You let go a little bit and you get all this happiness. Just let go of the five senses a tiny bit and you get a tiny bit of happiness. If you indulge those five senses, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, physical touch, it's just a pain. They get control of you. If you just leave them alone, allow them to disappear, when things begin to vanish, it's so much happiness and freedom and so much energy. For those of you who are still in dullness, get sleepy now and again, don't be concerned about that. Don't make a doer in sloth and torpor. That's just the ordinary person, the Putuchana's reaction to sloth and torpor. I shouldn't be tired. I ain't going to put energy into this. I'm going to beat my record of staying up. 11 o'clock, nah, that's easy. I'm going to do 12 o'clock. 12 o'clock, nah, that's for wimps. I'm going to do 1 o'clock. And I get up at 3. Whatever it is, be careful of people who want to fight. If you're a fighter, you're not a monk. If you're an investigator, you're a monk. If you're a fighter, you're just on the side of Mara, the controller, the one who wields power over others' creations. You're not a fighter. You're an investigator. You're a letter-goer. Until you can do this so well that whatever you see, you leave alone. You meditate there even with sloth and torpor. Just be patient. It's this old karma. It's there for a reason. It's got its cause and effects. So all you can do now is make sure you're not making any bad karma with what you're experiencing. That you're creating the causes in this present for future peace. And you don't make peace by fighting wars. You make peace by being peace. Being peace is letting go. Stopping the sankhara. Stopping the will. Stopping the sense of me, self. If you do things like that, then all the glass of the dukkhas, viparinama, the dukkha of change, that's on the outside. Sankhara's change. forms, bodies, objects of the senses, they all change, perceptions change, feelings change, consciousness changes, but the one thing which doesn't change is emptiness, stillness, when nothing moves, where everything is empty, where nothing is left. That's the place we have a freedom, just from this monstrous change, which is oppresses the mind. You get used to something and it changes. You get a little bit of happiness and it vanishes. There's always just moving, as if, you know, this person who can never sit still is always moving. The life is always moving. I just get so tired after so many moves. And that's the change of the five, of all the khandhas, the five khandhas, the change of the senses. I'm moving so much. Everything is always changing, always in flux, and after a while you get tired. Can't I have any rest? Can't I have a few moments where there's not so much moving? I remember being a monk for so many years. 7 years, I think, before I first saw a TV. And when I saw a TV, it was in this house in Scotland with Ajahn Sumedho. I just weren't in the room where the TV was, but we were in the sitting room waiting for a talk. And I just looked through a couple of doorways and saw this TV in the distance. And it just hurt my eyes. Things were moving so fast. I just couldn't take it. So similarly, for life, it moves so fast. After a while, we think, can't we have some stability, some peace, some experience where things just are at rest? And the rest state is found inside. When one just abandons all the things which change, the five senses, abandon even the objects of the mind, and go to these incredibly stable states called the jhanas. We've got a single perception which doesn't change for long periods of time. At least that much shows you what's possible. The reason they don't change, because there's hardly anything left. The more there is, the more change. The less there is, the more stable. It shows you, if you really want to get to the place where nothing will ever change, you have to let go of everything. Well, the Buddha said, if you want real happiness, you have to abandon everything. This is Sabban Nalang Abhinavesaya. There's nothing in this world worth holding on to. Not any part of the khandhas, nothing at all. Why? Because of the suffering nature of it. So, if you're experiencing suffering, if you're not happy, if you're not blissed out yet, now you should understand the reason why. The reason is not because you're not trying hard enough. The reason is because you're trying too hard. And by that I don't mean you just end up sleeping. That's, again, doing something. You just sit down and you stop. You look for that inside, which is always controlling you, which is always giving the orders. Your mindfulness is developed upon that, and it stops that. It learns how to turn off the chetana, how to turn off the doer. This is good enough. Though my heart's open to this moment, no matter what it is. Let it be, let it go. I'm just happy to be with this. When that's established, for many moments, stillness happens. This stillness, which is my favorite word for samadhi, when you start to let go, the leaf moves more, less and less. Things wobble less and less. You start to experience a tranquility, first of the body, and then of the mind. With the tranquility of both comes ever-increasing happinesses. It's a happiness which is the direct result of the dukkha disappearing. And here I'm focusing on the doing dukkha, sankhara dukkha. The stillness grows. The energy gets even more. Happiness crescendos into a jhana. You understand what the Buddha experienced. You know the path out of samsara. You just develop that path, make much of it, until the stillness gets so strong you can turn off samsara at any time, and especially the time of your death. You press the letting go button and you'll never come back again. That's what we mean by katang karaniyang. Done is what needs to be done. There is no more of this. You know how to be still. You know how to stop the house builder. You know how to take out the seed of rebirth. Kina bija. Seed has been destroyed. Awivolhi chanda. There's no more growth of doing. Nibanti dira. Cessation is certain. Yatayang padipa. Just like a lamp which is about to burn out. So, stop doing so much and experience the beauty of the Eightfold Path into nothingness. So talk tonight.
Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho Sanghāṁ.